Hello, everyone. Welcome to Human Spirit Radio Network. This is Jessica, engineering the show for Sarah McCroskey. Founder of the Human Spirit Radio Network, Sarah McCroskey is also an expert in energy medicine. Down to earth, with over 15 years of clinical experience, Sarah empowers clients and audiences to fearlessly embrace the arc of human evolution and live their unique spark audaciously, becoming free from conditioning, personally constructed limitation, and physical emotional imbalance. Sarah promotes a living path partnered with spirit, walking her talk with humor, passion, and clear-sightedness. Sarah offers one-on-one sessions by phone, in addition to bringing forth her vision for the Human Spirit Radio Network to provide free, life-giving content and internet radio broadcasts to a worldwide community. Here's Sarah.
Thank you, Jessica. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for being here today. Today, our broadcast is Living Future Now. We'll be exploring some useful distinctions between the default future and the generative future, exploring how we can become how we've become experientially entrapped to cyclical time, the phenomenon of taking past experience and projecting it into the future through our expectations and unexamined beliefs. And most important, we will be looking into how we can reclaim our energy, witness and stop our time looping, select a future we are fully aligned with, and step into it, anchoring this parallel internally and bringing it forth rather than waiting for it to appear externally. And then seeing, and then thinking we'll believe it. It's possible when we see it on the external. We'll be doing some personal work and energetic clearings here as well. So please set yourself up with a pen and paper and light a candle. You may want an ash collector as well, in case you want to use the flame of your candle to transmute energy and transform energies. Before we begin, let's set up an alchemical container in which to do our work today. Aligning with larger energy streams and allies potentiates our focus and our release of our creative intentions. Invoking and welcoming our own greater selves and allies can be done through ritual, ceremony, which can be simple or complex. This is a way I create a simple yet powerful space to work with clients, and I'm going to use it today to invite us all to become present here. So I'm going to ring some bells and say a few words just to get us all here together. Together we create this sacred space. May the spirit that lives within us and around us bless our endeavor. We honor and invite our unseen friends and guides to assist and foster our work today. May the shifts, releases, and helpful changes which we all desire to make come freely. And let these awakenings be consistent with the greatest good and the highest possible truth. Good. So let me just preface everything I'm going to be going into here with just letting you know this is my perspective, as with all these shows and broadcasts I create. You know, this is based on my own experience. This is based on my own exploration. This is based on my perspective. So, you know, I invite you to join with me in exploring these topics. And if things resonate for you, great. If they don't, fine. Feel free to drop any of it. And absolutely explore for yourself, drawing your own conclusions about everything. So these are my, you know, my own musings, my own perspective, and you know, if you want to, if it rings true for you, great. If it doesn't, that's fine too. Okay. So some people say the future already exists. In physics, many believe that every conceivable reality, literally anything you can possibly imagine, already exists in a parallel dimension. How do these parallels exist? At an alternate energetic frequency. Just as radio and TV stations broadcast at different frequencies, which we access through attunement via our TV or radio device, so too do parallel realities exist, which we can attune to via our perceptions. Perhaps at the moment of the Big Bang, if the Big Bang did in fact occur, all possibilities burst onto the scene from a sea of unified energy into an infinite number of distinct frequencies, not separate, but distinct, yet interwoven. And our joy and challenge is to consciously surf the parallels we choose to pull forward into our personal experience, and then jointly, through our agreement, into our shared experience of reality. Perhaps as the unlimited creator beings we actually are, our creativity lies in our conscious choosing of what to bring forth energetically through our experience. Maybe we don't have to generate it from nothing or make something happen, but rather choose and select consciously. We humans live in a sea of language. Language and the actions it fuels are largely how we generate our own experience, relay our values to others, and join with others to construct our consensus reality. Very little exists as reality, quote unquote, outside of what we've agreed to. There are, however, a few primary laws and forces that do not require our agreement. They simply are. Bashar outlines five such universal laws, and I think these are commonly agreed to by a lot of, like, the Gnostic tradition and various other traditions. But he puts it this way, and Bashar is a extraterrestrial who's channeled through a man named Daryl Anka, and very wise being. Anyway, his five universal laws are: you exist, you always have, and you always will. You are eternal. That's one. The next is: everything is here and now. The next is: the one is the all, and the all is the one. And then finally, what you put out is what you get back. And everything changes, except for the first four. Now, similarly, gravity does not need our agreement. It exists whether we agree with it or not. Most everything else, though, in terms of human affairs and constructs, exists by our agreement. Consciously or unconsciously, we've agreed, and we can change our agreements. Much of what we've learned about how reality is generated is in fact backwards. It's difficult to intervene in dynamic creation if we've got the steps all wrong. We're told that what we see and experience determines how we feel, think, and believe. What happens to us determines our experience. Our parents and their parents and their parents forever have considered this the nature of reality for eons. Actually, what we're taught and adopt are agreements, what are what we consider to be primary. So what we're taught and adopt, our agreements, are in fact more primary. It's our agreements that generate our beliefs, determine how and what we see, which translates into our thoughts and feelings. Our agreements create the context, and then within that context, the context actually shapes the way we see and think and what we're looking at. We spend a lot of time trying to change our feelings and our thoughts rather than re-examining and calling back our energy from our agreements and our conditioned responses. When we own our agreements and are consciously aware of them, we can choose to disconnect from the ones that no longer serve life. As Jarl and Steve from the Gratitude 24/7, they send out these little notes daily called Gratitude 24/7. And as they put it this way: how you feel has to do with what you think. What you think has to do with what you see. What you see has to do with what you believe. What you believe has to do with what you've been taught. Until you examine this chain reaction, you won't understand that your freedom lies in your ability to frame reality through this cascade of perception and experience. If you're really conscious, you understand the way the world feels to you is almost entirely in your hands. So we're taught to look at it in this one way, that the feelings and the thoughts are somehow that's dictating our lives. But the truth is, what's dictating our lives is what we've been taught to believe in, and the structures of our thinking and the agreements we hold about what's true. Those actually drive the way we think, and that drives the way we feel. But if we got it all as a mishmash, then it's hard to actually insert ourselves in the process in a way that effectively dismantles what doesn't work for us, that allows us to change our agreements so that we're not fostering a context and a way of thinking that generates outcomes, structures, organizations, realities that we're not preferring, that we actually would like to have exist in a different way, in a way that serves everyone and serves our Earth. So let's talk about the future a little bit. What is the default future? I've been reading a very interesting book called The Three Laws of Performance. And then the subtitle is Rewriting the Future of Your Organization and Your Life. It's by a man named Steve Zaffron and a guy named Dave Logan. And although a lot of what they're talking about is organizational stuff, they also get into personal stuff. And, of course, they're very connected. And they talk about the default future, which I think is a very interesting idea. And I'm just going to read a little bit from what they say. The default future is a projection of what happened in the past, all told through descriptive language. But by the default future, we don't mean the inevitable future, such as aging and eventually dying, but rather what is going to happen in our experience, whether we give it much thought or not. Our default future consists of our expectations, fears, hopes, and predictions, all of which are ultimately based on our experience in the past. Incidents from the past live on as prediction, giving us our default future. So the default future is the unexamined future. If you drop into your gut and into your own direct experience, it's what might live there as a dread or worst case scenario or based on if you have no power in the matter, how this whole thing is just going to play out. So a lot of times it's unexamined. A lot of times it's kind of unconfrontable. A lot of times it's based on having no power. And it runs in the background and is largely unexamined. So it's kind of like, you know, if we don't intervene with that, well, you know, we're likely to get what we're expecting. So what does time have to do with that? Well, as I was saying before, we tend to have been trained into living in a time loop. Jim Self says that in third dimensional reality that time exists as a loop. That basically, you know, we have this way of holding time as, you know, past, present, future, and that what happened in the past tends to loop into the future. And, you know, we don't spend a lot of time in this present moment kind of stopping time and living from a place of conscious experience, conscious relating, conscious thinking, conscious intending and creating. We don't spend a lot of time in the present. Mainly, we have been taught to be engaged in what happened before, what's happened in the past, especially if that content was difficult or traumatic. A lot of times, that content from the past wasn't experienced at the time of the past. You know, we jumped into our coping mechanism of just trying to put one foot in front of the other, and a lot of times that those traumas or those difficult experiences in the past got stored energetically. We weren't even present to experience them at the time because it was too much. So our bodies, you know, took them on energetically. Well, that content, when it's not experienced, just still has a lot of energy related to it and keeps coming up. You know, really our bodies are just asking us, please complete that work. Please go to that experience and heal it so that you can drop it energetically so it can live in the past, so it can be complete and in the past. But if we don't do that work, the past keeps coming up. It keeps coming up in our experience. It keeps focusing our, you know, we focus our attention on it. It keeps coming up so that we'll resolve it. But if we don't resolve it, if when it comes up, we try and push it down again, it becomes a place where we spend a lot of time. And a lot of times, those things that happened in the past, if they don't get resolved, wind up showing up in the future, because we attract, we're attracting energies that are similar, or we're experiencing what's happening as if it were similar, because we have these triggers that, you know, these little landmines from our past that get stimulated by new circumstances. So a lot of times what's happened in the past winds up playing out in the future. You know, we regret and rehash our past, and then we worry about and, you know, hold the future as if it's something that is just going to happen to us, versus it being something that we actually generate or choose or can select from the realm of all possible parallels. So if we live in that time loop, then there's very little of us inserting itself in the process of conscious choice. We tend to just kind of energetically attract our unfinished business and rehash our unfinished business. You know, it's kind of a very smart way for our consciousness and our body to get us to do the work. Because if it keeps coming at us, you know, maybe at one point we'll say, "Hey, maybe I can pull in the resources. Maybe I can pull in the support. Maybe I can pull in the consciousness and the community to work this turf and settle these scores and resolve past experience and our interpretations about it." So there's that time loop thing. But, you know, time's kind of a funny thing. Time doesn't fall into the category of one of these universal laws. And it isn't a force like gravity. Time is actually a construct. It's something that we have invented to coordinate. And for that purpose, it's excellent. It's more like an application, you know, like an app that you have on your phone, like, you know, AccuWeather or PayPal or OpenTable. An app, according to Wikipedia, is application software, and it's defined as a program that causes a computer to perform useful tasks. So unlike gravity or osmosis, time did not pre-exist. It's not inherent to our life here on Earth. We made it up for our convenience. It's really more like an app. But because of the way we've held it, and again, by agreement, and by the way we saw our parents do it, and the way we see other people do it, and the way we have connected with this consensus reality and keep generating it, we a lot of times feel like we're at the effect of time. yet it's really our own creation and a convention. So rather than as a convenience, a lot of people are dominated by time. You know, really feeling that 60 minutes really means something and that we've got to beat the clock or fit everything in or rush. Have you ever noticed how rushing or feeling like there's not enough time actually creates that experience of just constriction, and time goes way faster when we're in that space? When we're rushing, it's like time just goes just so fast. And yet when we're in a place of spaciousness or the way they talk in sports about being in that really concentrated, focused experience and space of, you know, of the way guys describe, you know, the experience of hitting a home run, that everything slowed way down, that everything was like in minute detail. You know, time is completely mutable. It's not like gravity, you know, in this reality where you push something off a table, it's going to hit the floor. You know, time does not act that way. Time's very mutable. And it's totally useful for coordinating meetings and tracking important dates. It allows us to monitor and chart natural cycles like fertility, tides, seasonal changes, star progressions. It allows us to mathematically calculate speed, velocity, acceleration. As an agreed-upon convention for tracking and monitoring, scheduling and coordinating, it's really useful. But it's not a force. It's more like an app. So I just invite you, because this one's one that's very deeply held and very agreed upon. It's got a lot of mass to it. But I just invite you to kind of consciously experiment when you find that time's coming up in your consciousness. Just allow for yourself to kind of hold it a little bit differently, holding it more like something useful, like an application, like OpenTable or PayPal, rather than a structure of reality. And to see if that changes things for you, if you find that makes it different. Because when we loosen up our conception and our experience of time, then it doesn't hold sway over us. You know, we can allow ourselves to be in this moment. We can kind of get ourselves here rather than, you know, thinking we got to resolve something from the past or forgive somebody or whatever that is, or that we've got to, like, you know, worry about the future or make it happen. Or, you know, pull ourselves out of this very moment. Because it's really in this moment, with our consciousness and our awareness, that we choose. This is the only place from which we can genuinely choose. You know, kind of unencumbered, free choice, free space, selecting options. Okay, so So who's in charge of the future? Who's in charge of the future? That's a good question. A lot of times, most of humanity is so absorbed in getting by and trying to make it in within time, you know, to get all the things done, to get the kids, to get the food, to get the job done, to whatever it is, so absorbed that there's very little conscious creating of the future or invoking or bringing forth. There's not a lot of attention placed there. People are too busy. People are too, you know, have too many things going on. And yet, in the background with that, our default future is very much kind of right there in the background. That default future, that unexamined future, the one that we hope doesn't happen, you know, that has an effect. And then, of course, there are some people whose whole what they're doing is making vast plans on a broad scale for events to unroll according to their agendas, you know, and their plans, and, you know, as a manipulation, you know, there is that. So, you know, with those components, you know, it doesn't bode very well for things. And yet, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, we don't have to agree with that. We don't have to agree with any of it. We can intervene. We can stop time. We can be present, intentional, and choose and select what parallel we'd like to reside in, what we actually agree with, and how we would like it to unfold. We absolutely can intervene with that. So we can, at any time, in any circumstance, whether it's a circumstance in our personal life, or whether it's in this more consensus reality, you know, global world, at any time we can wake up to an agreement that doesn't serve us, that maybe we weren't aware of or we didn't realize had been running in the background. And we can, once we become aware of it, we can withdraw our energy from that agreement. We can energetically drop the rope. Now, one of the other things that we have lost a lot of energy to is jumping into the polarity of things, where we don't, once we determine that we don't agree with something, we begin to fight it rather than just dropping the rope. Just seeing it for what it is, withdrawing our energy, turning a different direction, and applying our energy to the generation of something else. If we did that, we could create a world that works for everyone pretty powerfully, pretty quickly. If we actually just saw what we don't agree with, withdrew our energy from that agreement, turned around and applied that energy to what we do want and what we do want to generate and how we do, how we can create, and the parallel, and latching into the parallel where that's already happening and generating things from there. If we did that and built consensus reality around that, we'd be in a new world. But one of the things we've been taught or conditioned into is not just dropping our agreement with something, but once we decide there's something we don't agree with, we fight with it. We use our precious life force to try and make it go away, or try and get it to change, or try and get those people to believe a different way, or change the way that government works, or change the context that people live in who think that war is a way to achieve peace, or that poisoning the food supply is a way to create a better world. They may never change their mind. You know, whether it's just their perspective or whether they've got an ugly agenda, it doesn't really make any difference. We're probably not going to change their opinion. And fighting with them, we lose our energy. But anything that exists as an institution, as government, as an organization, even as standing armies, those things only exist if we cooperate with them. If we do that work, if we engage in that agenda, if we carry guns and arms for that cause, if there's no one to do that work, those things don't exist. They fall apart. Now, you know, people feel like they're in kind of a catch-22. Well, you know, I don't agree with that, but I have to have a job. And, you know, that's kind of the pickle that we have gotten in, because that's part of the marketing. You know, that's part of the how we get engaged and absorbed in doing and connecting with agreements that we don't really support. So, you know, withdrawing our agreement and energetically dropping the rope, literally taking our energy out from that agreement, turning around and directing it toward what we actually want to create. So part of what has to happen, you know, to be able to kind of start from a clean slate rather than kind of having all this unconscious content be generating this sense of a default future, you know, this kind of unexamined stuff, agreements that are unexamined, beliefs that are unexamined, you know, all that, to create a clean slate from which to create what we really intend, we kind of have to clear out some stuff. So I'd just like to invite you to just light your little candle and take out your piece of paper. And just in this space of absolute welcoming everything, just really giving yourself permission to allow the agreements and notions that you may have adopted or created to just bubble up, the ones that no longer exist, the ones that no longer serve, just allowing those agreements and those notions to just bubble up, those ones that would otherwise maybe be creating this sense of a default future, just with a lot of tenderness and a lot of self-compassion and a lot of allowing. Just allow yourself to bring those agreements and beliefs and notions to the surface. And with your pen and pencil, just write down some of those things that you'd like to withdraw your energy from, that you'd like to release so that you have a clean slate. Some examples might be the idea that, the world is dog-eat-dog, or the world is a ghetto, as the old song goes, or unconscious assumptions that you may have about human nature. So those might be a couple of categories. Ideas about the world and ideas about humans. I'm just going to give you a few minutes to just make a list of what you'd like to clear. Good, and we'll just take another couple minutes to finish up your list. good. And we're listening to a cut here by Leah Scallon from her book, her album. I think it's called The Illumined Pearl. Shoot, I'm forgetting. But it's Leah Scallon. She's wonderful. Okay, great. So another way to kind of get into this kind of core gunk that we've accumulated is another kind of perspective and a way to get stuff revealed is to investigate a notion in the same book, The Three Laws of Performance. They talk about the racket, and you know, you may have come across this term before, but the way they define it in this book, a racket is something that we have a persistent complaint about. So it could be a circumstance, it could be something in our personal world about about our own life or about our relationships. Or it could be a persistent complaint that we have about the government or politics or, Monsanto or, countless whatever else, a persistent complaint. So that's the first ingredient. The second ingredient is a pattern of behavior that goes with the complaint. So it might be... if you were going to look at it in your personal life, it might be the persistent complaint might be my husband is always late. My husband's always late. And the pattern of behavior that goes with that complaint might be I'm pissed off all the time. Or I'm always expecting that. Or I close my heart. Or I give him grief. And then the third component is that there's a payoff. And the payoff is usually unconscious. So usually the complaint and the behavior are pretty, we're pretty familiar with those. We may not like them, but they're familiar. But the payoff is usually unconscious. And nothing persists if it doesn't have a payoff. So the payoff is usually being right, or it could also be a way to dominate or avoid being dominated. So again, this is what we get out of it. Being right, dominating or avoiding being dominated. And then the fourth ingredient is the cost, which is also usually unconscious. And the example of a cost would be loss of intimacy, feeling powerless, or feeling less alive. So, within a racket, because of the way, these various components operate, it's something that's going to continue until we get conscious of it. So we might be, like I said, we might be conscious of what the complaint is. We might be conscious of how we behave based on that complaint and are complaining about it. But the two places that really get us to bring enough awareness so that we can shift the thing is when we start to look at what the payoff is. What do we get out of it? We don't continue to do anything if we don't get something out of it. That's just the way it is. So what do we get out of it? Honestly, what are we getting out of it? And lastly, what's the cost? because when you start to examine that, when you see what you get out of it, and then you look at the cost, then you can really determine, wow, is this worth it? Is this worth perpetuating? And get about the, you know, bringing the awareness and the witnessing enough and the compassion to just see what's the agreement, you know, see what's behind it. Do we want to shift it? Where did we learn it? Energetically drop the rope. You know, you don't even have to necessarily know a lot about it. You can just say, not worth it. And then when it comes up in your awareness and you're reenacting it one more time, you can intervene there. You can stop the action. You can be present and make a different choice. Takes a lot of awareness, but it's absolutely doable. And we can have rackets, and I think we probably do, that perpetuate the state of our world. You know, again, most of what's going on is happening by consensus agreement, and we're part of it. So again, what's the persistent complaint? You know, those damned, you know, 0.0001 percenters or whatever, you know, those damned, you know, DuPont, Monsanto, whatever they are, you know, those corporate persons, you know, whatever, our persistent complaint. You know, and the pattern of behavior that goes with that complaint. Well, what is that pattern of behavior? For me, a lot of times it's just feeling powerless. A lot of times it's like almost needing to turn away. You know? And what's the payoff? You know, for sure. I mean, here's another place where there can be a lot of consensus agreement. You know, we get a payoff in common, which is we're right and they're wrong. Or I'll be damned, I'm not going to be dominated by them. Or make them pay. You know, dominating. Okay, we're going to turn the tables on you and you're going to pay. You know, but being right, you know, it is a very core thing for human beings. It's something that's been going on for a long time. And it's been reinforced on multiple levels. Don't underestimate the insidious nature of being right. It's one of those things that in a lot of ways people are willing to die being right. Being right has that much importance in our world that people will go to amazing lengths just to be right. So that's one to, you know, really dig out, because it's insidious and it comes in many, many shapes and forms within us. I know it well. So, you know, I recommend, you know, that one, that payoff, you know, really examine that. Where am I just feeling really righteous and like everybody would agree with me? And then, and so, you know, certainly in the domain of politics and corporations and all that stuff, you know, we can get, you know, our being right and avoiding domination. We can spend a lot of energy there. But the cost, what is the cost? You know, feeling like we don't have any power. Feeling like, you know, these guys are running the world and we don't have any choice about it. Or feeling like, you know, they are separate than me and they are hateful and they are wrong. You know, just this disconnection, this disorientation, this humans are nasty and you know, human nature is violent. I mean, you know, we can have all sorts of crazy ways we hold it. And so much has been reinforced about holding it that way, doing it that way. We really have to intervene to change it if it's going to change. And again, it's seeing what your agreement is, seeing that you have agreed, and choosing to withdraw your energy from that agreement. Turn the other direction and take your energy and apply it toward what you really want to create. Step into the parallel that already exists, where the world works for everyone in harmony with nature and the natural world. Where these crazy constructs don't apply, like scarcity or other separation. These illusions, we don't have to abide by them, but we have to actively disengage. So, you know, there's that thing of just saying enough and redirecting our energies to enact a new vision. But we can't pretend that somebody else is doing it to us, or that we've just inherited a messed up world. It only exists by our consensus agreement. And if it's going to change, we have to pull away our agreement, drop the rope energetically, disengage. So my question for you is, what does the future mean to you? What is, I really invite you to take a little time, you know, create a sacred space, light a candle, and generate a new story. For you personally, maybe for your family, for your community, for your organization. And also for our world. What's the new story? Not reactive. Not defiant, not righteous. Just like a new recipe. A new recipe for the world you want to live in right now. And then our opportunity is to once we've become consciously aware of what we would, what our vision really is, really speaking it, using our language in a generative way, calling it into being in our own experience. By using language, we call it into our own experience. We call it into we create that reality through our language, which directs our experience. And by doing that and speaking that way, we're living in that future right now. It is a creative act. It's not something we inherit. And we sure don't want just the historical, cyclical deal. It's stopping time, being absolutely conscious right now, speaking the future we want to be living in right now. And then finding all the evidence for that. Because the truth is, most of the people on the planet have an agreed upon optimal vision of the future. Most of the people on the planet, the vast majority, agree that they want a world that works for everyone in harmony with the planet. So it's not like when you create your own vision for what you want and what you'd like to see in your family and community and organization and what you'd like to see in our world, that you're going to be alone in that, because you're not. It's about being active in that. Not like doing battle with the corporate giants, but being active in your language, in your generative optimism, in your celebrating what's already working, celebrating what's right with the world, as DeWitt Jones puts it. Reaching out, speaking with others about, not about what's wrong, but about what's right. And building the energy of that. Living future now. Nobody's stopping us. So another way to look at it is from the future. There's another way to just get into the energy of it. So once you've created that picture of, you know, for your personal life, however, you know, your community or organization, the world, from that future, in the closing your eyes and really being in the experience of living in that future right now. You can ask yourself from that perspective, how did we get here? And what did it take? You know, it's a way to generate for yourself the action steps that lead to that future. It's kind of like living backwards a little bit. So stepping into that future, the ideal future, really the one that really makes your heart sing, why you're here. And from that place of living in that place, how did I get here? What did it take? You know, what was the step just before I arrived here? What was the step right behind that one? What was the one right before that one? It's a very creative way to do it. Very different. Breaks up your reality, but it makes it very, very, it's an exciting generational process. You know, it's a generating something. And it can be very step by step. It can be very practical. So try that on. Closing your eyes, being in that future, optimum future. How did I get here, and what did it take? And it can happen in a group. That can be a group exercise. We can do it on a worldwide level. What were the innovations? So try it on. Okay, so we're going to be ending here very quickly, and before I go into doing announcements, I'd just like to close this sacred circle that we have been in. And I really thank you all for creating this powerful space. And I'm just going to ring these bells again and say these few words to close the circle. We thank our guides and unseen friends for the insights and assistance they've lent to our work today. May the shifts, releases, and clearings that have occurred here be for the greatest good and the highest possible truth, and may they be integrated easily, consciously, and with joy for all of us. I'm just going to do a few announcements about the other broadcasts we have here on Human Spirit Radio Network. You can enjoy Human Spirit Radio Network broadcasts 4 times each month. The first, the third, and the fourth Fridays of each month at 2 p.m. Pacific. And the last Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific. Here's the lineup. The first Friday at 2 p.m. is Waking Gods and Goddesses, Embodying Divine Wisdom and the Sensual Life with host Maria West. Maria is doing a new 15-month series that she started a couple months ago based on her new book called Effed Wide Open. And it's a great series. The third Friday of each month is this show, Human Spirit Radio, with me, Sarah McCroskey, at 2 p.m. Pacific. The fourth Friday of each month at 2 p.m. Pacific, so next Friday, is Stories of the Sacred Feminine Archetypes with host Amanda Alois Johnson. And Amanda is also doing a new series that began in January, and she's sharing and exploring the myths and the truth stories of direct communion and embodiment with the 13 sacred feminine archetypes. And then on the last Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific is a new show that I've created called Whole and Balanced, Energy Medicine and Your Health. And I'm the host, and it's all about energy medicine and et cetera, et cetera. My show in February is going to be on Saturday, February 28th, at 10 a.m. Pacific, and we're going to be talking about How do unresolved emotions translate into physical symptoms and illness? And how can that content be revealed and balance restored? So unresolved emotions translate into physical symptoms and illness, and also how they translate into that time loop thing. You know, we'll be getting into that too. So that'll be the 28th at 10 a.m. Pacific. And each show also includes a few energy readings and clearings for our live audience. So if you'd like to call in live, you could receive a bit of a clearing. And that's basically it. So thank you, Jessica McKay, for engineering the show today. I thank all of you for being here today. And if you'd like to invite your friends and community, please do. The more the merrier. Our model is cross-pollination, and our offering is free. So until the next time, remember, lift your frequency. You change your world, literally. You select a different parallel, and that shifts everything. So love and blessings to you. Enjoy the month.